Parenting's hard, you don't know what to do. You're blaming your kids, but it's probably you. You love your kids and that you can trust. Just remember your kids don't suck.
Welcome to Your Kids Don't Suck, cultivating closeness with your children through non-coercive conscious parenting. We're your hosts, Kara Tedstone and Rathia Lee. Let's dive in and grow together.
Welcome back to Your Kids Don't Suck, and it is an honor and a privilege to record every time we do because we love being together and because life is hard. And so if our challenges and rewards can help you, that feels so good, right, Kara?
Oh, it does.
So we want to do something a little bit on the lighter side today. I mean, I don't know how deep we're going to get. We kind of can't help ourselves. We're so freaking deep, but we were going to talk about TikTok because TikTok has changed my life. This is Rathia talking. I'm sort of the TikTok influencer, obsessed with TikTok person. I'll tell you my quick TikTok story, and then we're going to play you some TikToks and we're going to comment on them because that's fun. That sounds fun. And the question is, does TikTok help parents? I think it does. I didn't really know about social media. I wasn't into social media at all, but I thought I'm a performer. I'm a therapist. I'll just try some stuff. And I made a couple of videos. Then I went out to dinner with some friends. And this one person we were out to dinner with said, "Hey, I watched a parenting video of yours and it rocked my world. Why aren't you doing more of those?" And I was like, "I don't know." And they were like, "Would you please make more?" So I was like, okay. And I went home, and the next day I went on a walk and it was cold outside, and I just took my phone. I put record on the app and I just talked like how I really feel about non-coercive collaborative parenting. And I was very brash and very myself. And I thought, whatever. I posted it, and then that video went viral. And that means, like, you know, I had, you know, a million people have watched it at this point. I had, I don't know, 500 followers or something. And then what happens when you go viral is just everyone starts following you. So like by the end of that week, I had like 17,000 followers. And I was like, and people are like, "Tell me more." "Yes, I agree." Hundreds and hundreds of comments. I didn't even know what it meant. But I found out that you can have an instant platform. So suddenly people want to know your opinion about things. Oh my God. And I like giving my opinion. So then I became a video maker, a social media video maker. And I started making videos like almost every day. And I thought, how much can you talk about parenting? And it turns out I've been doing it for a year. It's been 1 year. I've made a tiny bit of money. You can make some money when your videos get really viewed. And now I'm on Instagram, putting my videos on Instagram. And now I'm going to YouTube. And I run support groups for parents who are wanting to come out of authoritarian parenting paradigms. And that's all because of TikTok. I also coach parents. I do these coaching calls. And now we have this podcast. Holy shit. Yeah. So TikTok has been very good to me. I have a whole community there. And now I have 42,000 followers, which is like amazing. Can you imagine 42,000 people in a room? You know, on the other hand, as an influencer, that's a very small amount.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It all depends on how you look at it.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I just had two thoughts like at the almost same time. Then I thought, first, isn't it amazing how one video can totally change your perspective? And then The second thought was, isn't it crazy that we're in a world where 42,000 followers isn't a lot of people? Because what? One video that you can make can change your life. And yet, oh, only 42,000. No big deal.
No, I'm happy with it. I'm fine with it. You know, I am a performer all my life. So I'm a performance artist. I make one woman shows. I usually have done live performance. I write music. I write monologues. To all of a sudden have an audience every single day it feels really gratifying.
That's why people, Rathia is so freaking good at the videos where she's just like going off and on about stuff, because you made one recently that I said that about, I think it was like the breaking down of childism. And I was like, wait, don't you write that stuff down? And Rathia was like, no, like, I'm just talking. I was like, so blown away.
Got it. I think about it. I think of how is childism as important as all the other oppressions? And I think about it for like a week, and then suddenly it opens, and then it all just comes out.
That's so wild to me though, because I'm not really strong. Like I get in my head when I'm talking too much. I find in this context it's easier because me and you were having a conversation, but I don't like making videos because it's like talking to the camera and then you're just trying to say what you want to say. And I don't like, I don't know. It's not my thing. I don't like it. Which is
Yeah.
tough for Instagram because I know Instagram's a very like face. They want your face. They want you to talk. And like some of us, like, we don't, that's not our medium, you know? But
Yeah.
that's your medium. You're so good at like just talking.
It turns out that's my medium. And then I
It's
made
amazing.
videos where I dance and talk. That's fun. And then
That's
I
fun.
started doing these dialogue ones where I play the two different voices.
I
Oh
love
my God,
that.
who knew? I mean, that is so satisfying and fun.
Okay, can you say something? Just say this is the first, say something about this being the first viral.
This was my first viral video. A million people have watched it. This is how my audience was built because I really go at the heart of this work.
When people find out I'm a non-coercive, non-authoritarian parent, a very common question is, what about when your child is rude or disrespectful? That's like a big question that people have because being disrespectful is like the worst. You're not supposed to ever allow your child to do that. So there's this like implication that that would be a place where you have to now punish, shame, withdraw your love because that's like not okay. That's a big word, not okay, that people use. Now, I just want you to know that my perspective is, very uncommon, which is I don't feel like there's anything that my child could say or do that is not an opportunity to love them and get closer to them, no matter what the hell it is. She could call me a stupid fucking bitch, loser, dickwad, and I would use it as a chance to open my heart and learn more. Am I a stupid fucking bitch, dickwad, loser? I mean, am I acting that way? Maybe she's onto something, or maybe someone said it to her, or maybe she's in pain about something. She can't figure out another way to let me know. And I know that people say, well, you better teach her another way to let you know. And the truth is, when I love her in that place and I meet her there, she finds another way. When my daughter was two, she would get on the floor with all the pots and pans and she would yell, fuck, fuck, fucking, fucking, fuck, with all the pans. And I would get down there and do it with her. And when she got older enough, I explained, if you say fuck around some people, they're going to get upset because they think it's a bad word. And so she learned to be choosy, to use the word when it felt right and safe for her to use the word. Kids aren't stupid. They know, they can feel it out, they can make choices. And it doesn't mean that they're being bad, that the word is bad, that the behavior is bad. It's always an opening. It's always an opening. Even rudeness is an opening. And adults are rude as fuck to each other. So why do we expect children to be so nice and sweet all the damn time? So fucking annoying. Anyway, if rudeness triggers you, go work early. Look at what happened to you when you were quote unquote rude. How did your parents treat you? And that's probably where they withdrew their love and they let you know there's a limit to their love. It wasn't unconditional, it was conditional. And so the practice of unconditional love means there's nowhere your child can go where you will not follow.
That is so good. That is so good.
All
Okay,
right.
I have thoughts. I have so many thoughts. First of all, the ending is key because it's talking about how no matter what they do, you're actually going to follow them into the place where you're finding out why they're acting the way they're acting. Like people, I think people listen to our show, and if they're not fully on board, they're like, this is so permissive. You know, you can't like do this. Like, real life has to happen. And this is just so unrealistic. And you have to be that parent who shows them the way. And it's like what science shows us, what child development is about, is we're all acting in ways that are confusing to the rest of humanity because we're trying to get our needs met. There's always something underneath our behavior, right? There's a function to our behavior. And I learned that when I was studying applied behavioral analysis, which is all behaviorist conditioning for children, especially with children with special needs. But they still taught that. They were always saying the function of the behavior, figure out what is the need, because they're trying to communicate something. And you can reward them then with that need. That was the principle of the training. Now we know that we're not trying to work with rewards or systems like that. But if you can join your kid, if you can understand that they're being rude, but it's for a purpose, then you can follow them there and you can meet them there and you can join them there and you can validate that. And I feel like this video is so good at explaining that in like a non-sciencey way. Like it's just, you're just getting to the heart of it, that like wherever your kid goes, you can join them with love.
Reminds me of Vivek Patel's philosophy that he calls no wrongness.
Yeah.
That as soon as you make something your child is doing or saying or being or acting or feeling wrong, you are immediately separate. You are
Yes.
immediately on the other side and they are alone. As soon as you're judging your kid, they're alone. And it's just sad because people just don't understand that people really believe that being judgmental is helpful guidance. They really don't understand that it's hurtful to judge your child, that it's hurtful to be critical, that it's hurtful to shame them. Like people, I think parents genuinely think they're helping. I
They
really do.
do.
I
They
wonder if
really
we could
do.
think of an example, like when parents say, "I'm not going to raise an entitled, rude child." They really think they're doing something good because they're making their child be kind.
Yeah.
Because they don't understand that kindness is innate. It happens when you're loved and you're given empathy. The kindness grows. It grows developmentally. It's natural.
And when it's being modeled, right? So I think too, parents are not actually so keenly aware that in each interaction where you're guiding your kid, when you're kind and connected, you're modeling that kindness that you want to see. So instead of being lectury, and you don't, it's unconscious, right? Instead of shaming, but you are shaming when you're lecturing your child, because you're telling them like, look, I know, and I need to do this for your safety or for reasons that you don't understand because you're just a kid. Like if you shame them by lecturing them and by using like kind of your authority as like the reason for the change of the behavior, then you're not actually modeling that kindness that you want to see them give to you.
Right, people are trying to shame their children into being kind. How
Yeah.
absurd is that? But let me just
Right.
give you something else, which is this is hard to explain, but I am at my core an irreverent person. I am like, fuck the system with everything I have. And I do use humor and I use dance and I use writing and I use singing to say, fuck the system, to fight the systems, the authoritarian systems that we all live under. And I also have to educate myself and learn all about racism and sexism and patriarchy and capitalism and, do the work. But I have a child who is a revolutionary. She really, really is. Because she's been given a space to name control patterns and things that don't feel good, her true fighting nature is out there in all its glory. And she's always been someone who curses and pushes back and fights control and names when people are mean. And she's so sensitive. And she's always cursed. And she's funny as hell. She's so funny. And I feel like a lot of her true essence has come out because I've given her permission to do it however she needs to do it.
Yeah.
She's so alive and funny and perceptive. And if I had like kiboshed that with a punishing and consequences and withdrawing my love and and said the way that you're expressing you and the way that you're pushing back is distasteful to me, and then I tried to change her personality, I don't know who she'd be. Like, where does all that fire go? It goes inward, it gets twisted, it becomes entrenched in the conflict within our relationship. We don't fight with each other. Me and my daughter, we don't fight with each other at all.
No, I can imagine you just have conversations.
Yeah, we get into it,
Talk
but
about it.
she knows that I'm open.
Yeah, I'm drawing the parallel between what you said in the video about like explaining to them, right? You were talking about explaining to them instead of shaming them. So, like, talking about the swearing, but being like, Well, some people really don't like swearing, right? So like we can't really, you might not, or you might try it out and like we'll see what happens, but like you might see people really get upset. And I see also comments on your videos like, please tell me how to do this with a toddler. That's my one of my hugest, biggest tools, which is like constant. Like I don't think I am aware of how much I do that, but I'm constantly explaining to her every single thing all the time. And really focusing on like never shaming her.
Like, what do you explain? What's something you explain to her?
Everything, like everything that she's doing, like wanting to run into the road. I'll just go, oh, like, see how there's cars coming? Like, well, if we ran into the road, like, what do you think would happen? And she'll go, hurt. I'm like, right. So we have to stay on the sidewalk, but we'll do that and we can still run on the sidewalk. Let's race. And we'll just go into a race and we'll stay on the sidewalk. And we literally like won't have these like, of course, there are times where like we do have to just leave the park even after we've done 10,000 slides, and she's like, or like she's ran into the road, for example, and I've had to actually get her with my body. Like that's happened like once or twice, and I've just done, which Vivek, I read a comment recently where he was saying this, how like he would just validate the hell out of his kid no matter what. He'd be like, he was like, I just go on and on about how everything's so damn wonderful, even though, his kid, young kid, might be like wanting to do some behavior, like light something on fire or do something like grab a knife. And he was saying in the comment where he'd be like, I would just go on about how everything was so damn wonderful all the time because he never wanted to squash the impulse. So that's what I try to do. I just explain what would happen if we did the thing and talk about what would happen. And now she kind of is like linking these ideas of like cause and effect.
What does that mean? Everything's so damn wonderful.
He'd be like, the kid will do a behavior and you know that they can't do the behavior because it's not safe, right? Like run into the road or like get out of their car seat while they're, in a moving car, like all these like objectively unsafe things that we cannot allow, right? We can't. He would validate the impulse. He would always go and say, like, I want to validate the impulse and redirect the behavior. That's one of his sayings. I feel like he'd be like, A plus, Kara, because I memorized that one. And I do it too, and I think unconsciously, all the time.
Validate like behavior, you'd say like, good for you for wanting to run into the road. Like, I mean,
Right, you'd be like, yes, I like running into the road is so much fun because like it's so spacious and like it looks fun. We obviously can't because I guess what would happen is like maybe we could get squished like a grape or like you'd redirect the behavior into a whole conversation. You're also validating at the same time, right? Like you're validating, I know you really want to do that and I get how fun that is. And you know what would happen if we did that? Or like swearing, like when they're older, you'd be like, we swear at home all the time, Tori, right? Like I don't care if we say, I don't give a fuck if you say fuck. You know what might happen though if you swear over at your friend's house where the parents really don't like swearing, they might get upset with you.
this thing of natural consequences has become such a thing. I hate to even use it
Yeah.
because people now use it to like say, ha ha, natural consequences. Like they use it in a vindictive way now with
Yeah.
men. But she wrote her friend a letter saying something like, you're so much better than me. You're so lucky. You're smarter. You have nicer clothes. You're friendlier than I am. Whatever. Like a letter like telling your friend how much better she is than her. And her friend didn't like it. Her friend said, I really don't like when you compare us. It doesn't feel good. Now, I could have said, that's not a good letter. You can't send them. Well, I could have intervened, but like she's learning through being alive. And then we
Right.
talked about it. We talked about it. Yeah, some people don't like the I explained objectification to her.
Yeah.
I said, she probably feels like you're treating her like an object.
No,
Like
that's
she
such a good point, too, because I think I was kind of going off to other places, but really what we're talking about with safety is like when you actually have to physically stop them, then you can lean on like validate the impulse, redirect the behavior in a playful way, join them, just be like, yeah, I get it. You want to run to the street. Like, that's so much fun. I would love to do that too. And unfortunately, there's cars, but like, blah, blah, blah. We can go have a race here. Blah, blah, blah. Like, you're just not shaming them for the thing. But then when they're older, you can also just step back and watch them have a process and see if they learn something and unpack that with them and be that safe person at home too. You don't have to always go to like the teaching place.
right, and the only reason that I am a safe person for my child to talk to about these things is because she is not spending her time trying to get around me and get away from my control and my judgment. Like kids
Yeah.
don't tell their parents things when they think they're going to get judged. That's when they start hiding everything.
Right. And that's why I love explaining in the young years because you're explaining the why behind everything that you do as a parent. So it's not just coming from like, I know better and we just can't. Like, I just feel like if parents could take the time to even just explain more, it would help them out a lot. with their younger kids, because kids are really curious. Like they really want to understand why they can't, you know, run into the road in front of a car. A lot of kids are just acting on impulse all the time. My child's really cautious. She had does happen to be really aware and always has. Like she won't like fall off the bed, or even as a baby, she would like be really aware of her surroundings and stuff. But a lot of kids aren't.
Well,
So
lots of
explaining
kids
to
are not.
them, just letting them know really that like you love them and you totally respect their impulse, that you don't think it's a bad thing or that they're a bad kid, like that they put a nickel in their mouth or whatever, that like you really just like get why they would love to explore and that they're so curious and you love that about them. And then you can go into the like redirection of the thing and it's not a huge deal, right?
Carol, this is so complicated. We're getting into this. I'm like, right, but so many parents say no to everything. Even if you're explaining why you have to say no to everything, like that's fucked. Like you
Yeah, I
still,
know.
parent, you have to look at why are you even controlling 99% of the things, and then of course you're gonna say, what about kids running in the road? What about kids grabbing a knife? What about kids touching fire? But we're not even talking about that because most of the time that's not what the issue is. Your kid is jumping on the bed, and actually there's no reason why they can't jump on the bed or jump on the couch. Or ruin your made bed and move your covers and all the things parents just cannot stand to let their kids explore. They cannot
Yeah.
stand it. It's so triggering.
I know. I know. I think if you're like a young, like if you're a parent of a young kid and you're trying to do this, then you just are really trying to say, you're trying to join your kid every single impulse they have. That's what I'm trying to get at. Like you're trying to find an outlet for every impulse that they have in a way that they can do it safely.
How is that going for you?
I mean, it goes really well. I don't really have any like problems with it, I feel like. I don't have any years where I get really stuck. Because if it's really cold outside and she doesn't want to bring a coat, we bring it with us and she puts it on in 5 minutes. If she doesn't, the toothbrushing thing has been a real breakthrough. I like really tried to let it go for a while. And then I was just getting really worried that she was going to get all these cavities and stuff. So I just told her that I was concerned about like cavities. Like I obviously know she can't ex understand. And I was like, you know, I don't want to fight about it. And I know you hate it. And it feels gross, doesn't it? To have somebody in your mouth with a toothbrush, right? And like we're just having this long conversation about it. And we just got to a place where I would just sit in the room with her and we would just be talking because she wants to tell me all these stories and stuff using her little language. And I would just have the toothbrush there and I would just go, whenever you're ready, whenever you're ready, I'll help you in there. And she just has gotten to a point, we've done this for weeks now, where she just brings it to me and she goes, ready. And I just go in there and then we're just done. But it's because though, I think that I've forced her a couple of times when I got really stressed out, and I did. I forced it in there and I hated it. I felt so bad about it after. I was like, we're not doing this. This is crazy. I'm not going to do this. I'm just not going to force toothbrushing. But not doing it and skipping it was making me feel like we were going to get fucked with cavities. So I was like, I'm not going to do that either. That's too extreme. That's not going to work for me.
Right.
So I let it go as much as I could. And then I realized that if I just sit in the room with her and talk to her about all this, and of course we watch the videos, of course we sing the songs, of course she understands like toothbrushing is a fun game, that adults try to make it a fun game. That wasn't working for her. She didn't give a fuck about the fucking toothbrush videos. She didn't want to do it while she was watching her show. She didn't want to do it upside down. She didn't want to do it downstairs. She didn't want to do it upstairs. She didn't want to do it with a different toothbrush. We tried all the behavior things that we could try, and it still wasn't working. It was this massive, like it felt like a fight. And I was like, I know when I get in a fight with my kid that I need to let her be in the driver's seat. But she
Yeah.
still had to brush her teeth, right? It's a non-negotiable for me. It's just like one of the very few, like running into the street, like picking up a steak knife. Like you're not gonna, it's not an option to do.
Whenever we said, like, if you set a limit and your kid is okay with it, it's fine. Like, if you're like, okay, screen time is over, and your kid learns to be like, okay, that's okay, I think, as long as you're listening and watching and caring and responding to your child and not forcing, and like if your child's collapsing in order to say yes. So like I'm totally fine with what you're doing with teeth brushing, and I think that it's working. But I think to call it a non-negotiable is really confusing after everything what we're teaching, because that will give parents permission to say, oh yeah, I have 100 non-negotiables, because most parents have 100 non-negotiables, including screen time, including bedtime, including sitting at the table to eat, including whatever, washing your face and saying thank you to people and shaking people's hands when they want you. And like, you know what I mean? It's like it just paves the way for the million non-negotiables that people, parents feel. And I think it's just the wrong term, non-negotiable. I think it's the wrong term because I don't think it's true that you're non-negotiable. In fact, you negotiated your way to where you are with the teeth brushing now. It was a process where you realized you were forcing and you found another way to give her choice and autonomy. So it's just inaccurate, is what I'm trying to say. I think it's inaccurate. And the whole premise of non-coercion is that you will get to points with things where you are sure that, you know, your kid's teeth are gonna rot, or your child's eating, you know, my daughter is eating terrible chemicals, you know, like red dye number two, and eating the worst candy for literally 5 years. And you have to prioritize the kid's autonomy over the thing you're sure is gonna destroy their health, their teeth, whatever. Like that's the rub with non-coercion. Is that parents say, well, it's not good for their brain, it's frying their brain, just like their teeth, it's going to rot their teeth. It's the same exact thing. And it doesn't, it you're right. If like in your thinking, you're a little bit coercive there, because you're saying that you're going to be doing it no matter what. And I don't think that's really, really true. I don't think you would do it no matter what. I think if Aaliyah was having big tantrums and crying and really shutting down and whatever, you wouldn't. You wouldn't. You'd look at it and you'd be like, ugh, this is, I don't, you know, this is hurting her.
Here's the next TikTok video that we're going to share in this episode and talk about after. This is on parents being assholes.
Hi, parents. If I said parents were assholes on one of my videos and I offended you, I think you didn't understand something. You see, all parents are assholes sometimes. And some parents are more assholes more of the time than they're not assholes. And some parents try really hard, really hard, really hard not to be an asshole. And they're still an asshole. That's me. Do 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 do. That's me.
You know, I've made this video once where I said to people, if you shove your child in the car seat and hold them down and put on their seatbelt, and you don't listen to what their body's saying or doing or asking, and they're crying, and you do that every day, you're an asshole. Fuck you. And somebody who had been following me just like said, thanks for calling me an asshole. You know, I have an autistic child and you don't get it. And la la la. And like, he's very upset with me. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. I said, even if your child's autistic, you still can create collaboration. You still can listen to your child's body and listen for consent. But I bring this up because I often call parents assholes. This is my brand. Parents are assholes because they have all the power and they don't often use it in a wise or loving way. And the more that they can see that, it's the beginning of being close to your child. So, you know, that's a lot of what I do, is I ask parents to look at the places in them that are hardened to love and that their child is knocking on the door of their places of shutdown. That's what children do. They say, I want to be close to you in this place where you are shut down and mean or cold or withdrawing your love or neglectful or punishing. I want all of you. That's what our children do. They knock on our traumas. They go, you're not available in this place. And I'm going to push this button again and again because I want you to work on this, because I want to be closer to you. And then we see them as a problem. And then we judge the fact that they're pushing on our buttons. And, you know, this is what we talk about. This is what all of our podcasts are about. It's like, if you don't have a process as a parent to scrupulously look at your triggers and your reactivity, you're just going to be reenacting on your child. That's the only other option.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to playfully invite parents to see that about themselves. And I do have a huge following of people who appreciate that. They go, and when I did that post, Kara, I just got hundreds of people going, I'm an asshole. I'm an asshole. I'm an asshole. So am I. I was an asshole today and I feel really shitty about it. I'm trying to do better. Tell me how to do better. What should I read? What should I do? I mean, it's awesome. It's like a whole new thing.
when I first found you and like you were calling parents assholes and stuff, I definitely wasn't triggered by that. I really felt like you were right. Was very new into my parenting when I found you. Like I think I had a 6-month-old at the time. And I don't know, I just knew like, yes, like that's what parents should be doing is looking at themselves in the mirror and knowing that they're going to hurt their kids. Like it's unavoidable and striving to repair with them and find ways that they hurt them less and don't hurt them at all in places where they previously were. Like, I think if you're really triggered by hearing that, like, I would get curious about that.
Well, it brings up the whole thing of like most of the world, not just our country, but our world, most of the world believes that oppressing children is just normal.
Yeah.
And so I'm
You
doing
know,
this.
and you can only start to like really lean into that thinking. Like, I think you can only even like accept that as truth once you get curious about things like this. Like, well, why am I so triggered by somebody calling me an asshole? I know I'm not an asshole. I'm a good parent. Well,
Right,
because of
exactly. That's what I
childism,
mean.
because of
Yeah, when that
childism, and
person
it's
gets,
unconscious.
yeah, and I'm like calling you out, like I'm calling parents out. That's pretty rad thing to do. And
Yes.
sometimes they get, and sometimes, you know, there was someone on a comment recently, they said, "You're being really hard on parents." And then another one of my followers said, "You don't get it. You don't get Rithia. This is what she does. She's actually helping us." And I was like, "Oh, that's so awesome." Like it's in the name of support. I'm trying to shine a light on a whole other path.
Yes, because there is something to be said about like you can attract more people with this like really loving, warm, empathetic approach. But there's this whole other layer to coercive parenting that needs to be talked about directly. And
Yeah.
you can like, I don't know, I do work with parents who tell me like they don't agree with our podcast and like the majority of the stuff that we say.
Yeah.
And that's okay, but that's like not what we're here to talk about. Like we're here to talk about like what we feel is the not talked about deep underneath shit that we got to work through as parents. And part of that is really understanding that like at the end of the day, like we have a lot of work to do on ourselves.
And our children are going to help us with that. They're
If we
not just
let
our,
them,
they're
if we
not just
let
our
them.
tormentors. They're actually our spiritual teachers. Maybe we should play another one, Kara.
Yeah.
Mom, can I get my hair dyed purple like Jenny? Oh, absolutely not, honey. No. Why? Because I said so. But why? Because I have all the power and I can make you do whatever I want. I have all the resources. I have access to money and time and love and food and shelter and protection, and therefore I can control you with any decision that I decide to make. But that makes me scared of you. Yes, and that's how I like it, because then I can control you. But then I don't feel safe. Yes, but I feel safe. Controlling things makes me feel safe, and that's more important than what you feel. But now I have to lie to you and keep things separate from you and create a separate life from you and protect myself against you. That means we're not going to be as close. Well, it's worth it to me because then I get to feel powerful and I don't have to feel helpless and powerless. And that's my priority. Well, then I'm going to have to start rebelling. Great, because then I can blame you for why we're not close.
What inspired you for this one?
You know, honestly, all I do is start with a thought and then I go back and forth till it's over. It's an improv. I just do it, you know.
Like with the hair thing? Is that where you started in your head?
Yeah, I started with
Kid wants to dye their hair.
yeah. I don't remember. I don't remember, but I usually start with some idea of like someone saying no. Okay, I'll just what's something someone kid would ask and the parent would say no. And then I don't know, I can't even explain how I get these ideas. I try to name what actually is happening, which is never said out loud, which is I have all the power and I can do whatever I want. And the kid saying, but then, you know, kids don't have the language to say, but then I don't feel safe. And then the parent says, well, that's good because then I can control you and that's how I like it. I mean, this is what no one says out loud, but this is what's happening.
Maybe you should break down what you mean by the kid doesn't feel safe. Because I feel like parents don't get that. They're like, well, they're safe because they have a roof over their head and they have, you know, we have financial, we can provide for them financially. Like they don't need blue hair. Like, what do you should explain that maybe.
Well, you have to think of it as if it was two adults. If you were with your partner and you were not letting your partner express themselves how they want by dyeing their hair, you were
Yes.
telling them what to do all day and judging them, and you would, let's say you had all the financial power and you had someone who said, nope, you can't do this, nope, you can't do that, too bad, because I said so, as to its equals. And you felt controlled, you wouldn't feel safe if someone was controlling you. No one feels safe when they're controlled.
And you're also talking about not being safe to be yourself, which is like a huge. Like that's the billboard of our earth. Like you're not allowed to be yourself. You have to be what like society tells you to be. And like we just don't agree with that as parents in this space. Like we really deeply want our kids to feel like they can be themselves because we think that that is what leads to empowerment to make good decisions.
Well, I was also thinking, Kara, it would be good to talk about why do we even do this whole thing? We're both doing this, and I'll speak for me, and then you can speak for you, is I am so close with my daughter. We have a fucking great time together. We went on an hour-long drive, and we just talked the whole time. She told
Yeah.
me everything about her life and her friends. We got into it. We were laughed. We sang songs. I mean, I am doing this. I'm trying to help parents because I'm reaping all the rewards. The rewards is an equal relationship of mutual love and play and fun. And it's great. It's not a power struggle. It's not, oh my God, when you have to control your kid all the time, it's no fucking fun. It's not fun for you. It's not fun for them. It's a
Yeah.
job. It's tiresome. It's exhausting. It's draining. You feel like a victim because you can't ever stop. I mean, you need more and more control as the kids get older and they get more autonomous and now they're not listening. Now you need more punishments. A hell realm. And then it becomes the world that we live in right now.
Yes. Why am I
So
doing this? I mean, I'm doing this for all of those reasons. I just think that like coercing my kid to fit like to fit to make it easier for me, right? Like to shut her down and her wants and her impulses and to invalidate them just because I said so and because I think like I have reasons for, right? That she doesn't understand. I just think that sucks the soul out of our relationship. I would just much rather look at what it is she's asking of me and try to meet her there because I want her to feel like I am just the safest person that she could ever imagine to share with all of those whatever she wants to share with me, impulses, desires, wants, fears, big feelings, feelings of anger towards me, ways that I'm being shitty. I want her to know, like Tori does, that you will take it. Because I just know that that is something that I really would have needed. I really needed that as a child. You know, my biggest goal is for helping parents to help parents understand that, like, I really believe that there's another way.
yeah, and it's super deep. I mean, you know, we're always saying it's a whole field of study because it's layers and layers of taking apart the assumptions of parenting that we've learned through the hundreds and hundreds of years of coercion and oppressing children. Including the real mind fuck is that children want to be controlled and that makes them feel safe. That's fucked. It's not true. It's a lie. And people will tell you all day long why that is true. Oh, my child wants me to tell them what to do because that makes them feel safe, like they're in a good container. That's false. I think it's worth saying that I really hope TikTok doesn't get banned because I feel like even though the app is changing, there's things about it that are hard. That are not, though it didn't used to be hard because growing it's so big. that there's it's an affinity group. So the way the algorithm works is people who think alike end up connecting with each other. And it's so powerful to be meeting hundreds and hundreds of parents who are really want to stop the generational cycle of abuse and trauma. It's so hopeful. It's so hopeful. And also TikTok is for anything else that you need to feel hopeful about. Politically, emotionally, self-help, personal growth. There's a whole like bunch of people on TikTok who have gone no contact or low contact with their parents, and they're all talking about it, and that's so cool.
I actually told, I've been telling, I tell clients that, clients who are thinking about needing to go low contact, no contact. I'm like, go on TikTok, search it. You will find a community there. It will make you feel so seen.
Yeah, and there's a time where no one could find any support on these
Oh my
topics.
God, it's so
Trauma,
true.
there's so much on trauma and parts work, internal family systems work, and somatic embodiments, so anyway, it's exciting and beautiful.
And I am shocked that that's how I found you because, I was looking at all sorts of parenting content, and somehow I have no idea still how the algorithm understood that like you might be something that I would be interested in because you're out there and I was looking at pretty like generic stuff. So I'm just so, so grateful. It really is a community.
Yeah, and that's how we met. What a cool story.
I know. It's so cool.
Thanks everyone for listening. I know this is like deeply provocative material.
This has been Your Kids Don't Suck. You can find me, Kara Tedstone, at www.karatedstonetherapy.com and on Instagram at Kara Tedstone Therapy. On my website, you'll find links to recommended readings and a link to my Reparenting with Mindfulness workbook, available now on Amazon.
You can find me, Rithia Lee, at www.rithia.com. That's RYTHEA.com. There you'll find published books, articles, and music and parenting videos. Also, I'm on TikTok at Rithia Lee, on Instagram at Rithia Lee. You can book parent mentoring sessions with me through my website. And also, I have an Advice from a Loving Bitch YouTube show that helps people heal self-hatred, and that's rithia.com/advice. It is important and essential to put our voices, Rithia and Kara, in a context. We are two white, cisgendered, straight, middle-class women living with financial and societal privilege. Because of this, our perspectives are limited and do not reflect the realities of all of our listeners. This podcast will feature guests with expertise around conscious parenting who differ in race, class, abilities, sexual orientation, and histories from us, to broaden the conversation and reflect the lives of as many people as possible. 25% of the proceeds of this podcast will go to creators of color who have been mentors and influences on our work and in our growth as parents.
If you like our show, please subscribe and stay tuned for more conscious parenting advice and insights. And check out our link tree at linktr.ee/yourkidsdontsuck to donate and connect with us.